Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker. Today's episode is sponsored by BetBright. My name is Thomas Rooney and this week I'm joined by the editor of Squawker, Mr. Will Hall. How's it going, mate?
Very well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Excellent. We've also got the assistant editor at Squawker, Mr. Jake Entwistle, with us again. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good. I love getting the misters in early.
That's makes good. Me sound I've got to do it for the third one now.
Yeah.
So Mr. Dean Ryan from BetBright, how's it going, mate?
Very good. Good to be on with some esteemed misters in company. It's good to be back on the Squawker Talker. It's had been we've had a couple of blank weeks, haven't we, with football at BetBright? So a little bit quiet, looking at other sports going on. But football is back. Match of the Day is back. Sky Sports doing all sorts of weird and wonderful programmes on football, which I'm enjoying. So, yeah, it's good to be here.
Excellent. So we haven't actually spoken to you, I don't think, since the World Cup concluded. So you obviously enjoyed the rest of that and pleased the Premier League's back now, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, firstly, World Cup, I mean, how could you not enjoy it? It was a fantastic tournament, wasn't it? I don't think even the winners, France, really got out of their kind of third gear. Let's say they have five. I think they still won it in third gear. Croatia, a fantastic story of the tournament. And England. So there's a lot to be hopeful for, isn't there, in international terms? And now the Premier League kind of comes back. What has surprised me, actually, and we'll probably talk about it in here, is that how are these lads all knackered from playing in a World Cup? I mean, surely they come back, they've retained their fitness. I don't know, my fitness stays the same all year round. Not very fit, but I think I'd be able to manage a few minutes. I don't know. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we mentioned off air about Harry Kane as well. He looked particularly... And if you're a Spurs fan yourself, you must be pleased you got the win, but you're a bit exhausted, didn't you?
He does look a little bit tired, but then, you know, is everyone looking at him as he's tired? I think if he says he's okay, I mean, what else do they play? Put a traffic cone up front if he doesn't start. So I'm glad he's playing. He's not going to score three goals every single game. He's going to have his spell. I don't think he's missed a summer in about 3 or 4 years at least, isn't it? Wasn't he involved in the Unders tournament and then he had to go off and play Euros and that was a disaster and he's come back and then I think he's been busy for 3 or 4 years on the bounce, so got to expect some kind of drop off, but he's going to score goals.
I generally think he might have had a rest, but he wants to score in August just to get that out of his
that's the measure of Harry Kane, isn't it? He has to score in August August, or I think it could damage him mentally, and so anything, penalty, off his rear end, anything will do.
He needs another hat-trick goal like that, cheeky back heel.
Yeah, and Tottenham didn't really do much in the transfer window. They should have bought Ruben Loftus-Cheek. That would have maybe given him the option to get a few flukes.
Anyway, we will move on to just looking back at the opening Premier League weekend. Lots happened, but one thing that didn't change is that Man City looked like the best team in the country by quite some distance. Comfortably beat Arsenal. A good look at the sort of... It started off, Raheem Sterling scored the opening goal. The 11th youngest player to reach the landmark of 50 Premier League goals. So he gets loads of stick, we know that. We've discussed that in the past. But Jake, he and Man City started very well, didn't they?
Imagine if he could finish. He would have been the youngest. That's obviously a joke. I'm a big fan of Raheem Sterling. And I think it was really telling that Leroy Sané had a whole pre-season. Obviously, there was the big furor over him being left out of the World Cup squad. And he didn't even get a start in the first game.
Yeah.
So he didn't look great in the Community Shield, and Raheem Sterling's obviously come back. I think Pep Guardiola was saying that he's so small, I think those were his words, he was saying, because he's so small and light, it takes him 5 days to get back to fitness, because he's not this big hulking muscle.
He says, we have to thank his mum and dad for his special body type.
There you go. So,
in answer to Dean's earlier question, how are these guys not knackered? It's the little ones that...
The little nippy Raheem Sterling. And yeah, he was great, obviously. And he played on the left wing, because obviously they brought Mahrez in. So Man City had this... It wasn't a new Man City, but there were tweaks to it. You had Benjamin Mendy that was just absolutely flying up and down to sometimes Pep Guardiola's disgust. But then you had, both wingers were inverted, and we saw Raheem Sterling, rather than sort of working in the half space on the right-hand side and being a bit more intricate in terms of 1-2s, he got to dribble a lot more with the ball. And for the goal, obviously, he just drifted inside and no one decided to tackle him. And he shot that was sort of... It was a well-struck shot, but I'm still... Check was unsighted, but it didn't go in the corner and it didn't... I don't want to take it away from Raheem Sterling, but I feel like Check sort of looked at it go past and think, oh, that's gone in, rather than making a dive. But yeah, Man City were really impressive. They didn't even play well for the whole 90 minutes. They did it in 10-minute bursts and just asserted their dominance every time they needed to. Obviously, Bernardo Silva got that goal, which was a Mendy cutback, which you would never have seen Delph doing
frequently. Yeah, you mentioned that last week, didn't you?
Yeah, so Mendy is a scary addition to the side because he is... cliched like a new signing because he played about 400 minutes last season.
Yeah.
So yeah, they were great. Arsenal obviously teething problems, and that's the hardest game, isn't it? Mm. Like Liverpool and Man City are probably the two teams that have the most dominant play style and the most well practiced. Mm. So if you're a new team, I said before the season that playing Man City might have been at the first game might have been the best time because they're only going to get better. But then you sort of realise that Arsenal have a lot of work to do, so they might have wanted like an eased in game where they could not be as punished for their little mistakes. But yeah, Man City are scary and they're going to get even scarier.
So, and Will, we spoke on the pod last week about whether they can get stronger. I mean, the signs already that they potentially can, with sort of Mahrez coming in, and obviously their bench was ridiculous. And they went to Arsenal, which is, although they've got teething problems, is one of the, in theory, tougher away games you're going to get, and they made it look reasonably routine. So very impressed with them and how they started.
I think it's like you say, it's that depth.
Mm.
The three substitutions. And I think I sort of said something similar about France when they brought on Matuidi or Pogba or someone, not Pogba, but at the World Cup. And you look at De Bruyne, Jesus, and was it Sané, the last
one? Sané came on.
Like, forget the Premier League. That's like, I don't know if there's any Champions League club who can sort of rival that.
No.
That power play of a
triple. That's proved their biggest players from last season, just on the bench, and then they go.
It's just, yeah, I mean, I think when the predictions were coming out, it was sort of like widely Man City who were being tipped, and some people, some braver people were saying Liverpool, but you look at that and you just think, I mean, someone, a rival title candidate has got to do something special.
Yeah, they've got to. I mean, people in the office were talking about this morning whether Man City could win every single game, which is obviously ridiculous, but I mean, they are massively the title favourites, and they showed kind of why at the weekend, and kind of without really being too troubled, didn't they?
Oh, they are. You're dead right. They're massively the title favourites. 8-13 is the price for them to win the league. There was a little bit of a move for Liverpool. They're now 7-2 from 4-1, and Liverpool look quite good. But with City, I think you guys have mentioned it well there. The most striking thing about that performance is the bench. Mm. You look at them on the sideline and you look at that bench and go, oh, I'd give my teeth just to have one or two of those players in whichever team you support. If it's not City, you want one or two of them. And they're just sitting there probably on their laptop, you know, on their iPads and just, you know, relaxing, knowing that they go and win this game if they need to. And I think it was a real wake-up call as well for Arsenal fans in terms of they've been busy in the transfer market. They have a new manager, and it's going to take some time for him to pull that together. I thought his tactical decision, certainly on that left-hand side of their defence, where you know what you're going to get with the overlaps and Walker just doing what he did, but they just continued to do it. They didn't have any answer for them. And when Man City turned it on, they look far and above every other team that we've saw last season in the Premier League, and probably what we're going to see this year. Liverpool might have something to say about that. So City did everything they were entitled to do, let's say, but maybe a little bit more, because you just know that they weren't really at full pelt, were they?
No, I think that's the kind of the general consensus. But moving on to Arsenal, Jake, you said that the concerns that you had before the game were highlighted, the fact that Man City are a better team, you knew that. So yeah, what were the positives for Arsenal? Even though we know the holes are still there in the defence, but was there positives at all on Emery's first game?
I think the positive is that there is a clear style that wants to be implemented.
Mm.
It was not implemented at all, and it was unsuccessful, granted, but Man City's first season with Pep Guardiola, they're riddled with mistakes. Mm. Jurgen Klopp, when he first came to the Premier League, people were saying, get rid of him, Liverpool don't look very good. And now look at those two teams. So it would be completely stupid to say Emery's, like, what have they done? What a bad appointment. Because the one positive you can see is there was a complete change in Arsenal's style of play. Mm. Arsenal under Wenger obviously tried
Freudian slip there.
Alex Scott did that on her punditry as well, didn't she? She's obviously an Arsenal legend, and she said we, and she was like, oh, sorry, I know I wasn't meant to say that.
I would do it, but Norwich never come up.
So there was that clear style, and Wenger played passing football, but it was never quite intense from the back like that. And obviously we saw Petr Cech nearly slotting one into the bottom corner himself, that Arsenal need to play out from the back, or want to play out from the back, but they perhaps don't have the tools to do that yet.
Mm.
And Dean said there about the left-back situation, that was sort of a horror show. Poor Maitland-Niles looks really promising. Emery really likes him, but because of his versatility, he's a victim of that.
Yeah.
He got lumped out in the left wing back. Kyle Walker, probably one of the fastest players in the Premier League, especially when he's not on the ball. You need two people there, and obviously he didn't get the help from Mkhitaryan. But Lichtsteiner came on and probably was one of the best players. Mm. Like you could see that he knew exactly how to play fullback, which was the complete opposite of Maitland-Niles, which isn't a negative on him. It's just there's clear... If Emery can build a team, and Gary Neville was saying about three or four transfer windows, which you sort of have to agree with, he's not going to move from his style, which I don't think any manager should do. If they believe that's how they win games, then you should follow that through. But Arsenal at the moment, the fact that 19-year-old Guendouzi had the most touches on the pitch and the second most was Petr Cech is worrying, because Petr Cech, although he said that he quite enjoyed having the ball at his feet because whenever he's played before, he's had to kick it long. He said that in his post-match interview. He's not cut out for it. Mm. And that's why they bought Leno. Leno isn't maybe a prolific shot stopper in the sense, or reliable at facing shots, which sounds silly. But if Arsenal want to use their goalkeeper as the second most available option on the pitch, they need to be able to use their feet. And Cech didn't look like he could do that.
Do you think the one thing with Arsenal, I suppose, is you say that it takes time in the transfer windows, but will Arsenal fans give Emery that time? I mean, say if they lose three of the first six, seven games, are there going to start being some negative atmospheres? Because obviously, you know, you still want to be finishing the top four. You've still got to be competing. So how much time will the fans give him as opposed to the board?
It will be negative, but like it would be so silly to just fall into the trap of every other Premier League team and start trying to find a manager.
Yeah.
All the good managers are tied up. So Emery, for what he's done, as I said, I'm really pleased that there was a style there. We just got a lot of work to go. And if he can build a team around that, then there are positives. He's won three Europa Leagues in a row. Yeah. Maybe he's going to focus on that this season and get in the Champions League that way. So any sort of sweeping conclusions from that game would be dangerous in terms of Emery's ability. But there were clear things, right? Leno has to be number one. That should, like, even though it's one game, maybe there won't be as an intense press as Man City, but you can't trust Cech there. He made some good saves, but if you want to play that way, Leno has to be number one. The midfield composition needs to be sorted out. Ozil was bad in the final third, but I'm going to put sort of, I always defend him, and maybe that's my fault, but he actually put in a lot of, he did more defensive work than Mkhitaryan. And I've always said this, is like, you can't expect, or not expect, but if Ozil gets criticised for only creating chances and he doesn't do his defensive work, and then does the defensive work and gets criticised for not creating chances, he was playing on that right wing to accommodate Ramsey the first time that Ozil's not been accommodated. And I thought he did his job okay, but then in the final third we lacked it. So there are certain little things you can learn from that in terms of who should play where. But the conclusions of like Emery and the team would be silly, especially as we've just talked about how good City are.
Yeah, I mean, before we come to Will about Liverpool, and he can smile about it.
This is like revelation after revelation.
Dean, just with your opinion on Arsenal in terms of, I mean, the top four is obviously what they're going to expect, and we discussed last week whether it is in line with Arsenal versus Tottenham in terms of the top four, the North London rivalry. But your thoughts on Arsenal, and can we really judge them too much after, playing such a good Man City side?
No, definitely not. I think you've got to give Emery as much time as he feels he needs to be able to call this squad, this team. He's a philosophy manager, isn't he? That this is his Arsenal. He's going to be a long way away from that. I heard the three or four transfer window comment made as well during the game. I think it was Gary Neville after immediately the first goal went in. And I, knowing Arsenal fans as I do, I think they're going to struggle with that concept for a little while, because it's not like, I know Wenger would never go for the kind of monster signings, but he spent plenty of money. He did leave a squad there with some big name players, and I think the supporters were relatively happy with when they got them. So it's going to take time. I wasn't very impressed. I think it's been highlighted that I think Cech isn't going to fit this system, and obviously he nearly scored a goal with his feet, so you would be concerned about him if that's a long-term plan, but it doesn't seem to be. Lacazette not getting game time in. I thought we were going to see Lacazette and Aubameyang kind of need this. So we've got to see Torreira on the pitch at some point, and that's going to be an interesting signing, because he does look the kind of player they need for that system. I was very impressed with Guendouzi, I think that's how it's pronounced, or Guendouzi. He looks like someone with a real attitude and bite about him, and I know he's a young man, and he didn't seem to be fazed at all, even playing the likes of Man City. So I think there's hope there for Arsenal. I don't think it'll be this season that they get anywhere near a top four. Betbright currently 2-1 for them to get the top four, and they're sixth on the list for that spot. So I think they might struggle. Europa might be the way for them to go this year, and if that's what he targets and he pulls it off, that would be a successful season for Emery in his first one at the Emirates. I fear for them in terms of whether the fans can take it. So we will see.
Yeah, probably it's work in progress, certainly, but you know, there's signs there, good and bad.
Yeah, just quickly on the Lacazette point, I thought when he was brought on, and obviously Ramsey was sort of taken off after 53 minutes, didn't look that, he hadn't had a pre-season really, or leading up to that final bit, so it was more fitness and system rather than just hooking him off. But when Lacazette came on, I thought, I'm a huge fan of him, and I thought he showed why he should play. Like, Liverpool show that your winger can be your main goal scoring outlet. So Aubameyang playing on the left wing, if you can get him to press because he's quick and do that from the left wing, and then have Lacazette as your link man, then I think Arsenal will be best served doing that, because the Ramsey as the number 10 didn't really work. He leads the press really well. He's got an incredible engine when he is fully fit, but you miss him making those late runs from midfield. So as I said, there's still sort of a composition of what is the best 11 to fit Emery's system that needs to be decided. But there were good and bad. And Guendouzi, despite making loads of mistakes as well, which was indicative of Arsenal, probably was the biggest plus.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So and just moving on to Liverpool, 4-0 victory for them. They sort of started where you expected them to. Obviously, scored quite a few goals in pre-season, Will. And the new signing, Naby Keita, was man of the match, I think. So were you impressed with how he slotted in and how Liverpool performed?
I think the way they performed is reflective of what was, I think, quite an extensive pre-season programme. It seemed like they played perhaps more matches than any of the top six sides.
Right.
It seems to start quite early. They obviously had Naby Keita available for all of those. And so it wasn't too much of a surprise to see how well he seemed to sort of just hit the ground running in the Premier League. just sort of going into analysing his performance, I think the one thing that stood out was the composure and the weight of pass. Mm. The amount of like little sort of through balls he just slid in, it was amazing. I thought that Liverpool's opener really was in microcosm form. Did just demonstrate all the attributes, because you had sort of the dribbling. The way he just sort of like pulled, I think, Balbuena and Fredericks across the front line, allowing Robertson to come in. And then he just sort of lingers on the ball for that second when perhaps fans were sort of getting on his back a little bit, saying, release that ball, release that ball. But he just keeps his calm and then just slides it. And then obviously Robertson sort of belts it across for Salah to... Yeah.
So I
think that is one element of the side that was... toward the end of last season starting to show real promise. It was that sort of Sadio Mane Robertson combination. Now you introduce Keita and it looks like the sort of having Salah on the right is a sort of deadly proposition in himself, and now you've got this really promising chemistry over there. Because I said the timing of Keita's passing, when you combine that with left back in Robertson, who loves to overlap or can undercut, and he's not afraid of going to the byline or into the middle just to sort of lure defenders away, then I think that's just going to open up so many gaps in defences, and which is something Liverpool struggle with against sort of low block defences.
So they've maybe, like Man City, added something to what was already a very good attacking force. And we obviously like to get carried away sort of in the media and stuff here, but I think Jamie Redknapp said after 8 minutes that Keita looks like he's played Liverpool for 8 years. So 8 minutes in, he's already just showing touches of class. And Dean, were you impressed with Liverpool and particularly Keita and on the opening game?
Massively so. And I think when you look at how they played and how Man City played, I think that's a wake-up call to the rest of the Premier League that both of those teams have gone and upgraded what was already very functional, very efficient, and a very exciting style of football, and they've just gone upgraded. Like, you put Keita in instead of Henderson, and suddenly Liverpool have a little bit more bite, a little bit more forward thinking in the midfield. I think if they keep their, I don't know what we'll call them, the Fab Five or however many there is in that Liverpool side, if they keep them all playing the way that they started there, albeit against a West Ham team who are going to go for a little bit of transition, they have to be a big threat to Man City, and probably the only one we're going to see this season. And I was very impressed. I think we haven't seen him tested, of course, in that game, and went that'll be the kind of crutch point for this Klopp vision now, in terms of they got very, very close. He didn't mess about the transfer market, upgraded the goalkeeper, upgraded the middle of the park. He already dealt with the defensive issue last year. They have to be very, very hopeful of a massive season. It looks like they're going to get it. For them and Man City, stand out, makes you open your eyes and go, oh, I thought Premier League is back and these two teams mean business.
Absolutely. And just also, Jake, I want to mention Daniel Sturridge as well, because he came on, and I think we'll mention combinations. Him and Shaqiri seem to have some sort of link up as well, and it showed it in pre-season. So to have him off the bench looking like someone who can score goals like he did in 2014 is huge.
Well, it took 24 seconds. That's how, like, 24 seconds and one touch and you'd already scored. And I think when we were doing a lot of these pre-season podcasts, every time I was on, I tried to emphasise how good he looked. Mm. So again, if they can use him for 20 minutes every game, he'll get 15 goals, because Daniel Sturridge has always been an incredible footballer. It's just he has no hamstrings. Like, if you could guarantee 30 games from Daniel Sturridge and guarantee it, every club would sign him. He's a brilliant footballer, because it's not a coincidence that he comes on and scores. That's what you get from playing up front and being a high level forward for that many years. So the fact that they've got him and Shaqiri sitting in reserve is great. And as we said, they could lead. They're of a quality that now they can lead a cup run or give the opportunity for. I think he took the whole front three off, didn't he, in that game? I think Mane came off, Keita went left wing, Firmino came off Sturridge, and then Salah came off for 5 minutes.
Luxury to have, isn't it?
Yeah, it was for 5 minutes, but he never would have done that last season. No. I don't think you ever saw the front three getting taken off. So the ability to win a game in 60 minutes and then pull people off when there's a big game coming up is now he can rely on that bench. So Liverpool looks scary in that regard, and I think I feel sorry for West Ham, because in the same way that I was saying that Arsenal, there were clear
similar situations.
There were clear ways that they were trying to change, but they haven't had enough time to do that. So the high line was obviously completely butchered by Keita's through balls, which I want to again emphasise. You thought you've not hit that hard enough, or you've taken too long, and then you look where it ends up and it's right on someone's foot to whip in. So yeah, West Ham, I don't think they should take too much from it. They did look quite bad, but a lot of five new signings started. They've got a new manager, a new style of play. That will take time. I don't think they will do that well, but I don't think they're as bad as that may be reflected.
Can't be judged on Liverpool away. I think they've got Bournemouth at home next, which is where their season
which will be more a better indicator, if not, it's still not going to be a full indicator of where they're going to be going this season.
Should probably do a Milner.
Sorry, lads. Can I just say on that Shaqiri signing for Liverpool, it's probably one of the most intelligent bits of business I saw over the summer, because he seems to be someone who's arrived at the club and thinks, I can't believe I'm at Liverpool, which is always a great, great sign when you've got someone who, because he's got immense talent, and for 15-20 minute bursts, he's as good as some of the better players you have at that club. But you just know you're not going to get that from. So when he's at a club and he plays 90 minutes every week, I think he becomes a very frustrating individual. But for someone like him to go to Liverpool, be very content to sit on the bench and play in those cup games, and when he gets his 10-15 minutes, you know you're going to get everything out of him. I think that's, he didn't cost a lot of money. There's a bit of humour about him even joining Liverpool. I think you even saw his shocked face when he was getting it done. That this is a signing that might just give them something when games aren't going their way, and that's so important for them. I thought it was a very clever bit of business.
He looks like one of those players that the better players he plays with, the better he is, because he's quite a technical. If he's relying on people's movement and interplay, then when you put him with the likes of Sturridge in the cup game, or he starts with Firmino and starts with Mane, then he is the sort of player that can maybe not be on their level, but they'll raise him up and he will be able to supply them as well.
Will, you were about to drop some absolute gold a minute, a second ago.
I was just going to do a Milner mention.
Go on.
Because I think I feel like we would get a bit of sit, maybe we didn't. he was a lot of people's man of the match.
Yep.
And he almost seems to have shifted into another role, because I think most passes this weekend, 102. So he's almost like the sort of deep lying playmaker now. And also,
Will, didn't you say Javi before?
That didn't happen. In jest. And we also saw him popping up on the wings, because his crossing is is basically how he got those nine, was it, assists in Champions League last season.
Yeah, not 10. So you don't really want to.
Yeah. I think that was just important.
It definitely deserves a shout. And he's still got a very big role to play, even though the new signings are coming.
And you would have definitely said that that midfield, bar Keita, was sort of second string, in that you had Gini Wijnaldum there as well, rather than just sort of Henderson and. You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain obviously is out for the season, so they've had to address that. But Fabinho, who I think was ill too, I mean, spending that amount of money on him, you'd expect him to start. But now that midfield just seemed to work so well that...
Will he
necessarily change it against I think it's Palace next Monday.
The really intriguing thing about the Milner role was that he was obviously playing very central and seeing a lot of the ball, but he sort of became like a pseudo right back as well when Alexander-Arnold really went forward. And Alexander-Arnold's so good on the ball as well. I think he's played centre midfield for the youth teams, and you see that his diagonal passing is impeccable, his technique's great. So when him and Milner sometimes swapped, and that's an incredibly difficult thing to mark. If you know that Alexander is the right back, but you see him popping up in midfield, and then Milner goes and covers, and then he played left back, right wing. Milner can play anywhere, and now he's doing that in the middle of a game. He's not just being deployed. Milner, we've got an injury, play left back. Milner, we've got an injury, play right wing. That's now happening mid game. And that's an incredible development in Liverpool's style and the fluidity of their team.
So he had a season at left back a couple of seasons ago as well. So yeah, he's a very valuable player for Liverpool to have. Dean, just finally on West Ham, I think they managed two shots on target against Liverpool, which was the same as Daniel Sturridge, who came on in the 88th minute. Would you be worried for them in terms of scoring enough goals or being too creative, or do you think they'll eventually gel?
I think they got a very good manager, so I think it'll just take a little bit of time. You know, they spent a fair bit of money, obviously, last season. Stadium money is now being reinvested. A good manager there. We'll see a different West Ham as the season goes. It may not be until around the kind of Christmas period that they really click into gear, but I think they've got enough. They're 8-1 to be relegated. If anyone is in the doldrums about them and think they're set up as whipping boys, I don't think they will be. I think 8-1's probably a little bit short for them in terms of, like, I can't see them struggling. There's enough real kind of bad sides looking like they're going to struggle this year. So I think that they'll be okay. We have to give them time. It's a very good appointment, Pellegrini, and they did back in with a few quid, so you think they'll be all right.
I think they're going to have a sort of similar season to Everton, but without the change of manager. So it'll be like, wait, you spent nearly 100 million, why are you 18? And then it will be, without the change of manager, then it will be like, okay, now we're starting to see the patterns of play, score a few more goals. Arnautovic is key. I really like Lucas Perez for 4 million. I think in a similar way of Shaqiri, it's not, if you bought a 29-year-old for 25 million, I would have been like, hold on, think about it. But 4 million quid, and in La Liga last season, only Messi created more chances. So he's going to be decent.
They've got enough tools to sort of improve then, haven't they? For sure. The first game, though, of the Premier League season was Manchester United against Leicester on the Friday night. A lot of the talk was about Pogba beforehand. World Cup winner, is he falling out of Mourinho? Is he going to leave? He was then made captain, and then he scored within, a few minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't really celebrate. Has since said, if I say what I want about Man United, I'll get fined. So, I don't know who wants this. It's a debate which I've had with so many people, but if it's Pogba versus Mourinho as a bit of a hoo-ha, whose side do you want, and who do you think's being out of order, and how do you see it going? Yeah.
If I were going to pick a side, I'd pick Paul Pogba's, but I think that's been, anyone that's heard me speak before might have guessed that. But he was very good, and Mourinho even sort of acknowledged, he said before the game, Paul Pogba was one of the people that's made himself available despite coming back from the World Cup, and he appreciated that. So whether Mourinho was trying to publicly patch a few of the wounds up, but then still behind the scenes there's a rift, we don't know. And obviously those Pogba comments were very odd. But then there's an interview that's come out this morning where he said, I'm so proud to be Man United captain. It's my dream come true. I've learnt from Ferdinand. I've learnt from Carrick. I've seen them all here. And I want to emulate them. So whether they can both have a future at Man United is complete conjecture at this point. But the performance of Pogba, the midfield in general, I think when the lineups came out, Man United fans were really excited about that midfield. And you had Andres Pereira as the number six there, who I thought looked really good. Again, despite making some mistakes and not being flawless, Mourinho again said after the game he was on the bench as a right winger for Valencia last season. He's come in and played at the base of our midfield and was phenomenal, which were his words. So that's really positive. Fred again had an on and off game, yeah, but so there were signs. And then the one person that we thought was going to do really well was, and that perhaps disappointed, was Sanchez, because he just seems to try too hard. I think whether it's a trust issue or whether he's just so desperate to make that impact, it seems like he made a lot of bad decisions, which is not good going forward. He's very sort of feast and famine. He does a lot of the same things over and over again, repeat process. And one game he'll create five chances, another game he'll just kick it into four defenders.
Yeah.
He perhaps needs to rein it back and find a bit more of a balance, because he's obviously a great player. It's just he needs to trust other people a bit more, which I think has become more of a common theme throughout his career, the older and the teams he played in.
Do you think just on the Pogba thing again, Will, quickly, when he was made captain, that could have been the end of it, couldn't it? If you know what I mean? And then, but then the lack of celebration and then the post-match comments.
Yes.
Then
sort
of,
do
you think it's taken, it was an opening day victory, pretty solid. Man United had positive signs, bad signs, but that sort of took the edge off it a little bit, didn't it?
I think he's just really trying to capitalise on his moment when he's perhaps at his most influential.
Does he like being centre of attention, does he? I don't know.
He didn't even need to say anything after the game to make the story about him. But the fact that he is saying it, and I wouldn't suggest that it means he's going to leave, because as Jake says, there were more comments that came out. I think they might have been sort of from the same interview, but they were packaged in different ways, so that obviously when you're writing a news story as a journalist, you need to sort of lead on one line.
Of course, yeah.
So those other quotes are going to be further down and perhaps not going to get so much attention. Mm-hmm. That then leads to fans suggesting that there's a media agenda when, I mean, you have to lead on something. You can't say everything at the same time. But what I'd also say is, despite the fact that I don't think this is him issuing a come and get me plea to Barcelona, with this sort of thing, if he's saying that publicly, what you see a player say publicly is only the tip of the iceberg. There's going to be so much going on behind the scenes. And I know it's widely reported that Mourinho doesn't like Mino Raiola, who's his representative. Yeah. So he's going to, and he's also coming in off the back of a summer where he probably feels a little bit undermined by the lack of transfer activity, because he's going to interpret that as a sort of United's refusal to show faith in him. So he's going to be in an insecure place already, and now Pogba saying this could be a sort of a flashpoint in this row. I don't think it necessarily needs to be. I think Mourinho, if he sort of thinks about it, could just, you know, play the comment down a little bit when he inevitably gets asked about it in his next press conference.
Yeah.
The result was a good one. There was loads of little pockets of positivity all over the team. You arguably have United's most exciting, promising centre-back partnership. They're in Bayern, Lindelof, Pogba, standing ovation performance. I think most dribbles, most passes. So he basically ran the show. Alex Sanchez, I mean, not great, but did Dink win the penalty with the shot that ricocheted?
He always involved.
So that's a contribution. And then you've got Luke Shaw's first ever goal for United, which can only be a positive, and maybe you'll see him kick on. So I think Mourinho can get away without addressing this, as he may have had to have done had Pogba said it after a loss. Who that might be why Pogba said it, felt he was able to say it, because it's a positive result.
Because he contributed to a win.
It's not gonna create a poisonous atmosphere necessarily. But as I said, if a player is saying there are things I cannot say, otherwise I'll get fined.
Yeah,
that's the tip of the iceberg. You don't say something like that unless you're trying to draw attention, shine a spotlight on the story. So, yeah.
I mean, it could have been that he was just singing from the same hymn sheet as Mourinho, and that they should have spent more money, or, you know.
Yeah.
You literally can have no idea what it could
have been. Important to say that it's always going to be speculative. It's necessarily when you say something quite cryptic like that, he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows that he's not going to get pinned down to directly criticising the manager.
And whatever happens in the next few weeks, he just could claim it was something particular that he was talking about.
But then I also think that there's it seems likely that it's being briefed to the press that Pogba's not happy, because you did get stories. And I think some of it stems from Mourinho's comments after his World Cup performance.
He could have just praised him, couldn't he?
And then, interesting, like as you said, it might not be about Mourinho, it could be about Man United.
Exactly, yeah.
Alexis Sanchez said as well during pre-season, I expected a few more world-class signings. And he was like, I'm really impressed with Pereira. I'm really impressed with Fred in pre-season, but I thought we were going to get more. So maybe Mourinho has actually sort of got his soldiers on the pitch. Yeah. And maybe those Pogba comments are, again, because it was very cryptic, it could be about the fact that Mourinho is only the head coach now, as he said. He's not a manager anymore. So maybe they're actually in agreement in some respects, but it's all complete speculation.
Absolutely. And do you think, Dean, what did you make of Man United's performance in general, and obviously the Pogba situation? Do you think that'll just it'll be at Manchester United for the long term?
Yeah, I can't see how that will change. Certainly with the early window closure, I know Europe can come in and take Pogba away, but I don't think that's going to happen. I was a bit surprised that Mourinho made. He struggles to make anything but negative comments, but I mean, a comment about Pogba being captain as in, yeah, you know, he's one of the players who can be captain of this club. He didn't really say he's my captain for the season and I'm delighted with him. And so maybe, you know, Pogba just biting back a little bit about that. I thought United were okay. They're a little bit lucky in that Leicester seemed to start. Why Vardy is on the bench when they've got him there? He hardly shot the lights out in the World Cup. He shouldn't have had too much of a break. I think... I'm surprised they didn't go at United a little bit more. Fred interests me as in the type of player who can release Pogba a little bit more, and I think we saw the signs of that in this opening game. So they've done okay, but you know, they won, they're expected to win. They're 12-1 to win the league. If you'd have said when Mourinho came into United, give him a few seasons and after one game of the season they'd be 12-1 to win a Premier League title, I think everyone would have gone, well, that's never going to happen. But it has happened. You have Man City there, odds on, Liverpool, people see them as the number two challengers. And then Man United at 12-1, Chelsea 14, 16-1, Spurs and Arsenal 28-1. There's a changing of the guard at the top, and I just don't think Mourinho likes being third best.
Yeah, especially to Liverpool and City as a Man United.
Well, yeah, they're the wrong two teams, aren't they, in fairness?
Absolutely. And just finally on Man United Leicester, obviously we mentioned Luke Shaw. It's good to see him score his first goal. I wanted to mention future Ballon d'Or winner James Maddison very quickly. In all seriousness, he was quite impressive on his Premier League debut, right?
I was going to say Leicester in general were impressive. Yeah. And I think the reason they didn't start Vardy is because Iheanacho had shown signs in pre-season. And even in that game, that he can play that role up front. Obviously, as we said before, the centre-back partnership for Man United was quite strong. Bailly in particular was very good. And Iheanacho met his match in that regard. So maybe it looked like Vardy should have started. But Iheanacho's runs and the fact he got a few shots away shows that he might finally get that sort of play time, and he might even play with Vardy at some point this season. But yeah, Maddison and Leicester's left side in particular looked really good. Chilwell was steaming forward, and got forward so often. Damari Gray put in an incredible shift attacking and defending. There were a few tackles where he tracked back, slid back and picked it up and carried it forward again. And then Maddison was in that pocket as well. It was just a shame that their right side looked a bit bleak with Wes Morgan on the right side of the defence. Pereira looked okay and looked very good attacking wise, but I think they need to play him right back, give him some midfield cover and allow him to overlap someone, because Amate was dreadful. And I think every time he's played for Leicester, he's been quite poor. So I can imagine Pereira becoming the mainstay at right back, and then Gazal will come in, or maybe Iheanacho will play on that wide area. Because he's played all across the front line. So Leicester have a lot. I think Leicester, in perhaps the result, in terms of relative to the result, they have so many more positives to take from that. As you said, Maddison was controlling a lot of the ball and, again, sliding, as we said about Keita, he was sliding quite a few through balls, whereas perhaps they weren't quite as measured as they were in the Liverpool game. The signs are there that he's not scared of the Premier League and that he's very much of the ability to make an impact in it. So with Gray, with Mahrez leaving, they've now got quite a few players that Vardy's obviously going to be in the spotlight, and he scored again, which he always does against the big sides. Mm-hmm. But now they've got a lot of other players battling for that second spot. It was all about Vardy and Mahrez before. Their combos were great and they were the ones that were scoring and assisting. Now there's a chance for other Leicester players to make a name for themselves. And Maddison in the post-match interview said, I came to Leicester because there is a clear pathway to the England team here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Vardy got in the England team. Maguire, again, was great, and he was on that left side as well. He's in the England team and was one of the best performers. Mm. Maddison believes that playing at Leicester week in, week out, he can get into the England team. And arguably, that's someone we lack in the England team, a creative 10.
No, I think actually I said that during the World Cup, to be honest. And Southgate is a manager that would end up picking him. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the England squad maybe by the end of the year, potentially. But we'll see.
There we go.
Wouldn't be...
he's managed to weave Norwich into it somehow.
Yeah. I have. It's taken me 10 weeks. It's taken
me 10... Without
Let's move on. we are going to move on to the rest of the Premier League. With Chelsea started off with a victory. Will, Sarri... his first Premier League debut, I think really solid performance. Kante even got a goal. And having said that it's going to take them 2-3 months to get going, that was a pretty impressive start, wasn't it?
I would say solid. I would also say Huddersfield were unlucky. They hit the post a couple of times. Moments in the game where it didn't look like Chelsea were quite dominating the opposition as much as they might have hoped. I would say the Kante goal is interesting because there's been so much speculation as to how Sarri approaches this Chelsea team because there are so many sort of little possibilities, and it's actually quite a few fun thought experiments you can have. One I didn't expect is the sort of Kante in a more advanced position. I know it's not necessarily like attacking midfield, it's more of an Allen type role, but he did say after the game that he's having to adapt to a new position further up the pitch, and it is something that I think Chelsea fans have been calling out for to some extent and a bit excited about, the prospect of sort of unleashing Kante on the opposition to sort of press further up the pitch. Is something he did against Atletico Madrid in the away game, Champions League last season, and just so happens that on his first Premier League game in this sort of role, he scores, equaling his best ever Premier League season tally.
He's still a prisoner now, isn't he?
So yeah, maybe he's a
goal season. He's
a 10 goal a season midfielder we've got here, maybe.
What did you make of them, Jake?
Yeah, I think that speaks volume of N'Golo Kante as a player. The fact that Leicester bought him as a winger, the first game he played for Leicester, he played left wing.
Wow.
And because he likes dribbling with the ball, and the reason he's no longer a winger is because he's not great at it. It looks very untidy, and it looks like he could lose possession at any moment. So that's probably why they moved him to centre midfield, and then becomes the best centre midfielder in the Premier League. Defensive minded, perhaps, is the caveat you'd use. But yeah, Will said that trying to work out which pieces of Chelsea's puzzle will then go into the Sarri midfield is really fun. And they bought Jorginho, so they literally got the same player for that deep-lying midfielder. But yeah, Kante is a more sort of vertical... he will still make a lot of tackles and a lot of interceptions, but that will obviously lower because Sarri eventually will expect to have 60% possession every game. But now, yeah, he's charged with supporting as well, because they need to carry up the pitch, and Alan last season for Napoli, like, he had the most tackles won. There was no denying who their ball winner was. It was just in a sort of position alongside Jorginho, and the fact that Kante can now have... usually Kante is his own safety net, and there's always the comments about there being two Kantes on the pitch. Now he does actually have a player that if he does get caught too far forward, or he misses that tackle when he is pressing, Jorginho is there to cover up, and Sarri trust Jorginho to do that. So, yeah, we might see more of Kante's old winger instincts coming out a bit more, in the terms that he'll get in the box. Obviously, the shot was completely mishit. So it was.
Don't say that.
So whether he meant to bounce it in off the floor over the goalkeeper, maybe he's the best player in the world, and I'm not giving him enough credit. But the signs are there that, like, to be in that position, I don't think... finishing is relative. He was in that position to score a goal, and that's the key thing. If he keeps finding those positions, then yeah, he could get more goals than usual. So Chelsea in general, there were signs. It was funny how Jorginho obviously scored his penalty, Kante scored, and then it was, who scored the third goal? It's Pedro, yeah. Pedro. Oh yeah, Hazard came on and thought, oh bloody hell, he's good.
Yeah.
So it was funny how the two midfielders that aren't charged with adding to the goals scored the goals. Obviously one was from the spot. But yeah, there are positive signs, and a 3-0 win in your first game. As we were saying, if Emery would have taken that, just to get people not off his back, but to temper sort of expectations. Whereas I think Huddersfield, I said before, were one of my favourites to go down. As Will said, they didn't necessarily play really badly, but... I think if Chelsea didn't beat Huddersfield, that would have been more alarming than losing to Liverpool or Man City or someone 100%. Like that.
Just on the penalty, you reminded me that we had a couple of very disrespectful penalties this weekend. Yeah. The Jorginho one was nice, and also the Pogba run-up had a very strong element of
Simone Zaza. Jorginho's always done that. Like, he's missed 1 out of 11 penalties in his career. So it obviously works. And another person that does it as well is Perotti, and obviously he scored against Liverpool, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's where you, because Jorginho actually jumps into his shot. So when he's doing that jump, the keeper, immediately, you're going to see someone make that. If someone's dawdling up and then all of a sudden jumps, that's when you're going to react to it. And then Ben Hamer just slid to the left. Jorginho goes, I'll pass it there.
Yeah.
And I love those. Again, if he misses, everyone says that's a bad penalty. Mm. But a good penalty is surely if you score and it's, if you're just running up, like you've got a forceful run up and you just side foot it really telepathically into one area, that's bad. Mm. Whereas Jorginho has a method. It's tried and tested. As I said, he's missed one out of 11, which percentage-wise is what you'd expect from a penalty taker. But it's not a bad penalty. It's a really intriguing thing. And now they've got Victor Moses, who takes penalties in the same way. Mm. We saw against Argentina in the World Cup, coolest man on the pitch, strolled up and goes, yeah, I'm just going to pass it there. You've already dived. Eden Hazard, that's how he takes his penalties. So Chelsea and penalty shootouts this year are going to be really fun because they've got three people that just dawdle up and go, I'll just pass it where you're not.
It's almost like freestyling as well as taking penalties, just who's going to do what. And just similar, Dean, similar to Chelsea, Tottenham got themselves a victory away from home. Pretty solid, if not spectacular. And what did you make of the performance? And Kane in particular looked quite tired, I thought. What did you make of Spurs' start?
I thought they were workmanlike. And I think there's a lot of ups and downs in that tumultuous window that Tottenham have had, of course. And I just thought, obviously that's not best.
We've all done it now.
Edit.
Tottenham just got away with it a little bit of luck with the Vertonghen goal. Kane, as you say, and I think as is widely reported, seems to be a heartbeat or two away from his top level. Tottenham have decided, brave as Pochettino called it before the start of the window, and brave as he called it at the end of the window, meaning two very different things, I think, to not strengthen their squad. And all right, we've got a very settled, a very happy dressing room, supposedly, but there's no Alderweireld in the starting 11 there, and everyone's talking about him still being probably one of the best centre-halves in the Premier League, but he can't get into the side. And I think Tottenham got away with it, and they'll need to play catch up a little bit on some of the other teams, certainly what we've seen from City and Liverpool. And Tottenham do like to play in a similar style to them when they're in full flow, a long way away from that at the weekend. So a little bit of sharpness needs to come into that side, and I think they need to get over the fact that, you know, maybe the stadium and the chairman are not quite in line with improving the on-pitch affairs just yet. Big year for Pochettino, because if they don't land a top four finish or get a trophy on the board, it's going to be a lot of players want away, I think, at the end of the year. And I say that as a truly biased Spurs fan. I'm very concerned about how they get on for the rest of the season. You were talking about penalties there. Isn't it great to see some of these foreign lads catching up with England and how England players take penalties?
Penalty experts.
They're learning.
Yeah, they're catching up. They've seen us now in full flow, so that's good.
Yeah, they haven't taken on against Pickford yet, though. Just on Spurs as well. I think these next few weeks, Jake, like where they've got obviously players coming back to full fitness. They've got the first home game at Wembley, I think. Then they've got the new stadium, so it's just about getting through games and winning games at the moment. And if they can do that, then who cares about kind of how they're playing for a little while?
Yeah, but they need to do it without playing Harry Kane.
Llorente's starting then.
It's again. This is Spurs' problem. No striker in the world that they can buy for less than 100 million will replace Harry Kane in the starting lineup. So until you win trophies and you build that sort of, like Man City, Riyad Mahrez went to Man City in full knowledge that he's competing every week for a spot. Mm. Whereas no striker's really going to say, I'm not going to join Spurs for in their sort of reduced wage budget and no chance of getting a medal at the season to be backup. And that's their problem. They don't have a striker that they can trust when Harry Kane is clearly out on his feet. Even towards the end of the World Cup, because the way England played and got sort of sat back a bit more, he was asked to do a lot of work. And I know they're professional footballers and they should come back and be fit. Mm. I'm not saying Harry Kane's not physically fit, but in terms of delivering his performance that we've come to expect, there's a clear sign that he's not fully at it. Mm. And the fact he's dropping so deep is a good thing sometimes, but he can't get back into the box. And he dropped deep against Newcastle and gave the ball away. It was one of the worst performances from Kane I've seen in a while. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I want people to notice it and think, no, but I'm not saying it's like...
I know
I've had
though,
some
I know
funny looks, but I'm not saying Kane's a bad player. Yeah. I'm saying that should be a warning sign to say, right, yeah, he needs two games off.
I do think generally, because he's had this recurring ankle, is it the ankle problem? Mm. I might be right in saying that. He's had that, and I do think Spurs have replaced him fairly well in the past. It just so happens that Son's away at the
well, yeah, they didn't want to play Son in case he got injured and then couldn't go and get his
exactly
medal.
So I think that it's just all hit them all. It's all hit them at once, really.
Yeah.
It's massively bizarre that they don't go out though and strengthen a bunch of players. I think Tottenham had the biggest amount of minutes played at the World Cup for their squad. I mean, if everyone's claiming that certain players can't come out and start the season after a heavy World Cup, it wouldn't have been the biggest stretch in the world of Daniel Levy's wallet or the Tottenham budget to go out and get a couple of bodies in. And I think it just freshens up a group of lads who are all very comfortable with each other, all seem to be very settled in where they fit into the team. Sometimes you just need to give that group of players another couple of lads to think about. And I just worry whether, you know, we know the Kane problem exists in terms of no one wants to come sit on the bench all season, but, you know, Llorente did and Janssen did, they're just not good enough. Yeah. And so there's an issue there what they can go and get, but they should have got something.
That's the thing though, isn't it? They're prepared to do it and play 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Now, yeah.
And because they're just not, there isn't that trust. Like, Kane looks tired, I'll bring on Llorente. Pochettino actively looks to avoid bringing him on until the final 10 minutes. And that in itself, I believe, is a problem. And again, it's not Pochettino's fault. He obviously feels the quality I've got on the bench is not good enough to replace a 50% Harry Kane. Mm. And when your options on the bench aren't good enough to replace someone operating at half of their output, then that to me is a worry. And as I said, Kane's brilliant. Kane is a brilliant player, but I just really feel like he just needs to, even himself, even if it's his fault, even if he's saying, oh, boss, I'm okay.
Yeah, I get the feeling he must be almost up to him.
Someone needs to be strong enough to say...
Well, he wants to score in August, lads. He has to score in August, otherwise it's going to taint him for another 12 months.
So maybe if he tries to get that goal in the coming weeks and then has September off, because he's already conquered that calendar month.
Yeah. Then we pack him off to Butlins for a few weeks so he can just get his head back in the game. What did you think of the top... If you were looking at now, after only one game, the top four betting is a bit of a close shot for City and Liverpool. Mm. But the rest of the teams, Man U, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, who do you think's best placed to remain in that top four or get back into it?
I said Spurs would come third in my predictions. So in terms of the best, if I was going to back one of those to finish top four, I'd still back them despite the sort of issues that we've just spoken about. I still think they're a very good team.
I think it's that factor of, as you mentioned, I think at the top of the show, the sort of the playing style being very distinct and well practiced.
Yeah.
And Spurs are the third best in terms of, well maybe the second or third best in term in that sense. But yeah, I'd say Spurs and Man United after those. I think Spurs, that's a good result against Newcastle.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
And they just have to manage this period. And then we'll be, and before you know it, they'll be back to the sort of consistently aggressive and attacking side that we saw last season. And it will be
Spurs fans will hope you're right, I think, and I'll be one of them.
I think Newcastle played well.
Yeah,
as well.
So I said Huddersfield were unlucky hitting the post twice, but Newcastle, I think,
they hit the bar. That one Rondon, the block, like, and Vertonghen's 9mm goal.
Yeah, that Rondon chance as well. Yeah. I think that was one that would have drawn it level, wouldn't it? Or would it, that put anyway.
I think it was an equaliser for 2-2. But in Diarmé's left.
If it finished 2-2, everyone would have been relatively accepting of that result.
Yeah, exactly.
Newcastle
did
enough, you know, and that's we got a little bit of luck with Vertonghen's goal, and he was due that. I think he's had about 95 goals scratched.
He said, didn't he? He said after the game, I've actually scored. They was like, it's the first time you scored in 5 years, and he's like, no, it's not. I've scored every season, and they keep taking them away. So that was quite funny. But
shout out as well for Matt Ritchie on the bench.
Oh, how angry
terrifying.
Did he look?
This is like Eddie Howe's angry twin brother.
Yeah. Someone said he's a bit like Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares.
Kitchen Nightmares. Yes.
Was that just because he came off, right? He was just angry.
Yeah, so he got the assist, didn't he? Yeah.
He played very well.
He's one who sort of, I think, was linked with a move away, and Newcastle fans I saw in response to that rumour were a bit sort of accepting but thankful of his contributions. Then obviously they had a horrendous transfer window this day. I think they'll be relying on him again a little bit this season.
I think Newcastle can be competitive, and I think say the top four race is going to be extremely open. You're looking at the top two, and then beyond that there is sort of a spots up for grabs, so the next few weeks will be very interesting.
Be a
indeed
better indicator
for sure. And just finally, I wanted to talk about the new boys in the Premier League. Bit of a mixed bag of results. You had Fulham losing to Palace, then we had Wolves drawing with Everton, got a late equaliser in that one, and then Cardiff lost 2-0 at Bournemouth. So first of all, come to you, Dean. I suppose Cardiff, we said, were the relegation favourites. Maybe going and 2-0 down to Bournemouth doesn't change anything there, and they look like they might be the team that struggles the most potentially.
Absolutely right. They're 1-2 to go down, so they'll be everyone's top of the list, I think. Well, let's call them bottom of the list. They'll be on their way, I would imagine. Huddersfield look like a team that are going to struggle this year. They're next in the betting. But of the new boys, I thought there's probably most hope. Obviously, everyone's excited about what Wolves might do this season, but I think it's a game they probably should have won, getting the sending off. I think they perhaps should have won that game, and they're going to learn plenty after that. So it would be interesting to see how Wolves get on this year. I think they'll probably be okay. Fulham looked probably the side that didn't get what they deserved from their opening salvos. Mitrovic looks full of himself up front. I think they're going to score a few goals, and Palace kind of mugged them a little bit more know-how, a little bit more clinical when they got their opportunity. So I think Fulham might do okay. They're 9-4 to go down. Probably the teams I saw this weekend, there's a bit more to come from them. Of course, they play Tottenham next at Wembley, so they'll lose that game, and then we'll see how they get on for the rest of the season. But I think they'll do okay. The exciting one is Wolves, isn't it? I don't know where people see them. I'd be interested what the panel think, where they see them ending up this term. I'd have them probably just to miss out on the top 10, but comfortably so, and play good football.
So Wolves-Everton was a bit of a chaos of a game, but Wolves showed flashes of what they can do, right?
They showed flashes, but they also showed complete unwillingness to impose themselves on 10 men.
I was disappointed with that.
So
after half time, was strange.
Dean said there that they could be quite exciting, and on paper they are. Obviously, we didn't see Adama Traore, who's one of the most exciting players, sort of just to watch. But they weren't very exciting in that game at all. They had a Johnny playing left back, who's right footed and sort of didn't want to get forward and support until they were losing. And then, as well, their three centre-backs were very much centre-backs. They have sort of ball players, but no one's going to stride out, really. Neves obviously got a goal and assist on his Premier League debut, which was probably the dream start for him.
Yeah.
A typical long-range shot, which he only scores from outside the box, pretty much. But then Moutinho himself is, now that he's older, is very much a deeper lying player, wants to try and control it. So there was a huge gap between the back three and the midfield four and their front three. Or even then, Jimenez looked completely isolated at times. There was no one in the box if he dropped deep to turn it around the corner to one of the fullbacks. So Wolves, I would have thought, would have been exciting. And the way they sort of swept the championship last season, I expected more, especially against 10 men.
It was after half time, wasn't it? They probably had a chance to really.
Yeah, and they just seemed unwilling to do it. And maybe it was because it was first game, we're sort of in a position here. But then when Richarlison channels his inner Thierry Henry to bend it into the far corner.
Defensively, that second goal was the way they just sort of 1-2 strode through them. Yeah. And even the first one is set a sort of cross into the box, they failed to clear.
So they kind of showed their good and bad, didn't they? It's both. I mean, Will, with Fulham and Wolves, they're two teams to watch still, aren't they? And they didn't show anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was the textbook manager's comment on a game which demonstrated flaws, but is at the end of the day not a bad result for Nuno to say they showed character.
Yeah, that's it.
A bit immediately afterwards. Fulham, we basically expected this, didn't we? It was just a bit of sort of a streetwise Crystal Palace team.
Settle Crystal Palace side
them,
as well.
Let them have the ball and then punish them for it.
Yeah.
I think Hodgson said as well after the game, I will not apologise for
it. Such a rebel, isn't it?
It was one way of summing up that game.
So they're the new boys. I mean, they said went there and did a job, didn't they?
I like the fact. So again, in the previews, I think I said that Fulham would try and play their football, but they might go and lose because teams will just go, all right, play that. But we've been here for a while. We're going to do that, and that's what happened. But I think that will also reap benefits for Fulham as well. I think Seri was, the consensus was that he had quite a good debut, got on the ball a lot, winning tackles, passing the ball, showed to be one of those midfielders that could, again, with more time, and when Fulham embed those 12 summer signings they've made, they've got Anguissa coming in from Marseille, who ranks really highly in tackles, take-ons, interceptions. So if they add him in and they embed him, they've got Kearney, Seri, Anguissa, which should not be relegated. That as a midfield, you'd think if that...
You're not going to say they're too good to go down, are you?
Well, there is, like, again, I know that doesn't always mean something, but if you saw that, that's a 50 million plus Kearney.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't remember how much they signed him on a new contract. So that midfield in itself shouldn't be in the bottom three. And then you've got the likes of Sherlin, Mitrovic. Sessegnon obviously wasn't fantastic, but proved, by the way, that he should never be relied on as a left back, because Wan-Bissaka just touched the ball past him and went by. So we'll see Sessegnon up front.
Or on the bench.
Final word, I'll go to you, Dean, in terms of what you please, the Premier League's back and you're looking forward to the coming weeks, I guess.
Absolutely right. And I think it's back with a bit of a bang, isn't it? I think lots to be excited from Liverpool and, of course, Man City, and that they're going to be the two teams to watch if you're a fan or a neutral. I think those matches are going to be pretty electric as we go through the season. And there's question marks over the rest of that top six, let's call them, and I'll include Arsenal. And then on the relegation front, I think Wolves and Fulham will be two exciting teams that I think will have enough about them to do well enough and regain their spot in the top division, which they're probably two of the bigger teams that should be around in and amongst it all. So very exciting to see how we go. Big gamer next weekend. Probably looking forward to seeing Palace against Liverpool. I think that'll be a good game on the Monday night. And Tottenham are back at Wembley.
And Emery Sarri. So they'll have no excuses, they're both in the same boat. Obviously,
you're a fact-finding expedition.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
It's going to be really
one with
intriguing,
tails
I
up
think.
And one with tails down, perhaps though. So yeah. Big test that for Emery.
That's what I mean. It will be. Our people did the 3-0 Huddersfield paper over any cracks, and did Man City expose cracks that other teams won't?
Yeah, certainly a lot to look forward to. But
find out next time.
Yeah. I've tried to sell that. No, but it genuinely is intriguing, and that's what those are the points of it. Is like were Chelsea as good as 3-0? Arsenal as bad as a 2-0? So.
Yeah, certainly looking forward to this weekend and the coming weeks. So thank you very much to Will for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Jake.
Pleasure.
And thanks to Dean once again.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Cheers, lads.
Thanks, guys. Speak to you soon.